Our main speaker tonight is Drew B.
Hey everybody, Drew Baker, alcoholic. I've been sober since December 6, 1995. My home group is the Love and Service Group. Maybe you've heard of it. And I have a sponsor. He's not in the room, so you can relax. I'd like to thank you guys for continuing to carry on the vision of this meeting. I was around when it started, and I think the one thing that one of the guys who helped found this meeting, Glenn L., wanted to make sure his legacy of donuts was carried on for the rest of the life of this meeting. And I see you continue to carry the legacy of donuts. Good job. I'm serious. He used to say, it's not a meeting without donuts, so you're clearly a meeting. Remember that, Penny? Yeah. So I'm an alcoholic. I have alcoholism. That's not good news, usually. I got sober when I was 20, and now I'm 40. So I've been sober half my life. That's a mathematical fact. Nobody told you there'd be math tonight, huh? Okay, well, that was the easy one. I got sober too young. It was too young to be sober. I couldn't even buy alcohol, and I was going to AA meetings. And the reason I continued to go after I was forced to go to AA meetings is because I identified. And it took me a few meetings to figure that out, but I identified with people. I loved hearing Kate and Leo tonight. I would kind of rather they spoke instead of me, but I don't know. I'm 20 years sober or something. I don't know if people care about that. But I, too, was totally different. I was painfully unique, and I had the experience and the intellect to back it up. But I started going to AA meetings after a series of pretty devastating catastrophes in my late teens, and I began to hear just a little bit of me in you. And, you know, for the two new people, welcome to AA. If you think it's a little weird, it is. It's weird. If you think this is weird, it's weird. We're going to tell a lot of inside jokes. Most of the people are going to laugh at my tragedies. It's going to get bad, and they're going to think it's really funny, so just be ready for that. But, you know, I think we have these meetings for you. It seems like it's all about me, because that's how I'm built, but really these meetings are for you to have enough space to identify with us. And if you think that you have the same problem that we do, we have a solution for you. And I was offered a lot of solutions in my day. I was dipped and sprinkled and rolled in dust and medicated and treated and talked to for a lot of different things. There was a lot of things that were going to fix me, and none of it really did until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous and had that pretty profound identification happen. So hopefully you'll go and have that identification experience that I did. I'm just going to continue with a little more hope part of my story. And I should be on the hotline, by the way. I've been doing the hotline for Contra Costa County for like 15 years. And I did it when I lived in L.A. for 5 years, too. So almost my whole sobriety I've been doing the hotline. And when I first got it back in the 90s, I was doing a very similar shift. I did the 7 to 10 shift in Contra Costa County. Give me a shout. Give me a buzz sometime if you want to talk, because no one calls the hotline anymore. Never. So, you know why? The internet. The guy or girl who's getting sober today, when they have questions about how to stop drinking, you know what they do? They Google it. And so, you know, the days of people going, and then I crawled to the phone book, and I looked up AA, and I called the automobile club on accident. Like, those days are over, folks. I was at the Atlanta conference, the international convention. Anybody else? Any other nerds in the house? What's up, nerds? nerd stays sober. And I went to a panel called the AA and the Internet, Practicing the Traditions or Practicing the Principles or whatever. And this speaker got up and he got sober because he Googled AA, but was smart enough to figure out how to find his local AA groups. But what he did is he had every, and I'm not going to do this because, like, you know, people shoot you with lasers out of their eyes or whatever, but he had everybody in the room pull out their phone in the meeting and type in "how do I stop drinking" and the name of their city into a search engine. And he said, if you don't find in the first couple results your local district, area, or intergroup or some kind of group in your area, you have a communication problem in your area in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's pretty profound, right? So just because we got sober through analog phones and phone books. Does anybody even have a phone book anymore?
Yeah.
I am... I love Debbie. I've known Debbie longer than all of you, probably. And I am working on her paper addiction. If you've ever been to a Debbie workshop, there's lots of paper flying around. When Debbie's going to have some sort of traditions workshop, trees start weeping because she's murdering their children. It all starts as a Word file anyway, you know. So anyway, I just think that the next wave of alcoholics is not going to be calling the hotline anymore. And, you know, are we ready for that next wave? What I've also found is that the new people that come to AA are not drunk. Have you noticed that? And isn't it funny how drunk people come to AA and the alarms go off? Like, what are you doing here, man? Like, this is AA. You can't be drunk in here. And it's like, what? Isn't this Alcoholics Anonymous? Like, it smells like Chanel No. 5 to me when I smell that shit. It's like, hey, come sit next to me. So anyway, that's my little food for thought on, you know, are we positioning ourselves to be available to the alcoholic who's coming in now and into the future? And I'll tell you right now, in this area, no. No, we're not. So, So how about some AA, everybody? How about some recovery, some personal recovery? Let's talk about it. I grew up, I'm the son of a preacher, so, you know, I'm all fucked up. And my dad was a pastor. My parents got caught up in this big wave of charismatic Christianity in the 70s. You guys remember that? Nodders over here? Like, yeah, I remember that. And it's when all the hippies got freaked out on acid and then found Jesus because they were too spooked out from all the LSD. And my parents were the spearhead of that movement and were really into, like, Jesus and wearing sandals and having long hair. And so I had a very spiritual household. I got baptized in my very own bathtub because my dad had connections. And and I never, even when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, never questioned the existence of God. But around that baptism time, I remember very specifically asking for an Atari 2600, which I've already clarified that I'm 40, right? And he didn't deliver. My parents told me that if you ask for anything you want, Jesus will give it to you. And he didn't deliver. So I said, no more. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. I asked once and it didn't work. So I'm going to wholesale condemn the whole process, you know. And so I figured out that I was on my own cosmically, that I, you know, God is up there surfing on clouds and throwing lightning javelins around. But like when it comes to day to day activity, I'm on my own and I got to figure out a way to get through this stuff. And this is very young. This is probably like 3, 4, 5 years old. And so I just began to live in my own little world. And without even knowing it, I began to like build this like wall around me of separation, and just completely different, completely alone. There was enough chaos going on in my family where nobody really noticed because I did okay in school. And anybody like not get good grades, but everybody assumed you got good grades, or they left you alone? No? Okay, one person. So I'm still not alone, I guess. So I don't know. I barely graduated from high school, but nobody noticed because of all the chaos. And I began to party. Now, partying was not drinking. Partying was partying. It was separate and different. And without knowing it, I had an abnormal reaction to alcohol. Now, let's unpack that for a minute. A normal reaction to alcohol is what I've seen other people do, which is you have a drink, maybe, and you feel a little sleepy and a little sick, and you stop. That's a normal reaction to alcohol. Have you ever seen that before? Yeah. That's not cool, right? If I only have one drink available to me, I will not bother because I drink to get drunk. Because I have this thing that switches on in me where I get to become all this other stuff, you know, and basically not me. If I can be not me, then I'm all good. And so that's what happened. I have this transformative experience from drinking. And so I had that experience as much as possible from the time I was 15 to about 20 to about 19. So I drank a lot. Let's just make that clear. I drank a lot. I used a lot of drugs. I idolized Hunter S. Thompson. I wanted to be Hunter S. Thompson is what I wanted to be. And like Hunter S. Thompson, I ended up in the psych ward very quickly. So it was sort of like I started drinking and partying, and it was awesome, and I had a lot of fun. And then I was like, boom, strapped to a table for 5 days after jumping out of an ambulance on the freeway. And, yeah, you've heard that before, haven't you? You want to hear it? All right. So I went on a mushroom trip, and I never came back. I thought the world was ending, and the answers to life, or at least survival in the new world, post-apocalypse, lie in a single issue of Rolling Stone magazine. And you sound like you believe that. Well, I sure did. And so I got thrown into a rehab center, a lot of very nice people like Leo in there trying to teach me the Serenity Prayer. And meanwhile, I'm like hallucinating whole people that don't exist staring at me with red eyes. And so they put me in this ambulance, and they were like, oh, time to put crazy in the basket. And they put me in an ambulance, and I freaked out and kicked the back door open on the freeway and jumped out of the ambulance on the freeway. And I should be dead, you know? I mean, how many stories do you have of like, I should have been dead that time? I mean, everybody's got the drunk driving stories, but I think really what I'm looking at here is a room full of dead people, you know? Should have been dead. And so anyway, I came to AA because it was on that checklist of things to, Kate. I had this long checklist of things that were going to make me better, and one of them was AA. It was down the list a little bit. And I didn't like AA. I didn't have that conversion experience when I walked in the room. I was like, ugh, old people, gross. And I didn't want anything to do with you. And then I went to a young people's meeting, and I had run out of excuses, and I had that experience in that young people's meeting where I thought, I finally listened to somebody's story, and I kind of thought, oh, okay. I did that. I felt that way, or I had that experience, and it was just enough to get me to the next meeting, and the next meeting, and the next meeting, and so forth. So, like I said, I got sober when I was 20, and I got sober in this sort of young people's world where you do lots of fun stuff, and you do lots of activities, and it was really powerful. It was a lot of fun, because as a young guy, I really needed to be validated. Not that we all don't need to be validated to be in AA, but I couldn't even buy alcohol when I was going to AA meetings. But I found a bunch of people who had the same experience, who were young and fired up, real fired up, like break stuff in hotels fired up. And have you heard about that? Yeah, that's good. So after the smoke cleared of my crazy newcomer young person experience, I was about 2 years sober, and I came to this place where I was suffering from alcoholism, sober and Alcoholics Anonymous. You ever been there? You will be. See, I had done all the stuff. I had a sponsor, I worked the steps, I did service, I sponsored other people, but I felt wrong, and I didn't understand because I had done A, B, and I wasn't getting C, so I was really confused, and I was probably on my way out. And so I just started, like, mixing it up. I got a new sponsor, and I kind of approached AA in a new way. I sort of recommitted myself to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I tried to find, you know, serious meetings. Have you guys heard about those? Where they're all serious about stuff and their commitments and whatnot? They're everywhere. But no, they're not, actually. But anyway, here's what I realized is that I can practice the steps as a way of life. I thought it was like a homework assignment that I completed, but I actually can take the steps off the wall, like Glenn used to say, take them off the wall and put them in your life as a way of life. And like the 12 and 12 said, there are a set of principles, spiritual nature, that if practiced as a way of life, can enable the problem drinker to live happily and usefully whole. And I thought, oh, like a whole single person, and which is kind of extraordinary for somebody who's 22. You know, your normal 22-year-old is still sort of figuring it out, and I was, but I was given the gift here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so so I think since that time to this, I have been doing that. I've been practicing the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. Turns out there's 36. Ugh, stop it. And they're right behind me on the wall, if you didn't know. And all I've really done is focus on what I started the meeting with: home group, service, sponsorship, both, you know, continuing to have a relationship with my sponsor and sponsoring other people. And not only have I had really good friends for all this time, but my life got really, really good. Really, really good. And that turned out to be dangerous too. Because if you stick around AA long enough and you do the AA stuff, we'll hose you off and, you know, get your hair cut for you and give you a service commitment, and then, you know, you'll get it. Whatever it is, you'll get your relationship or your marriage or your kids or your house or your dog or whatever it is that's going to complete you as a person. And then you're going to go, well, look it, I got what I wanted. Thanks, AA, I'm out of here. Like, I really appreciate all you've done for me, but I'm going to go live the life AA gave me. I have seen it many, many, many times. And some people catch it before it blows them up, and some people just don't make it. So that was really my challenge over the last probably 5 to 7 years, was not letting the life AA gave me get in the way of my AA life. And the trick to that whole thing is service. And it appears to be more and more and more service. Yuck. Do you realize, and I'm saying this with a little bit of shame, that I am doing service for intergroup, general service, and H&I all at the same time? That's not right. But there's a lot of guys that have been doing this a lot longer than me who, well, my example, once again, we'll go back to Atlanta. In Atlanta, every time I heard somebody talking with like 30, 40, 50 years sober, their stories started with them and their problems, and they had all this stuff going on, and me, and then I got to AA, and there was a sort of me against us battle with AA, and then they gave up, and then it started to become about like, oh, they, you know, started up an Alano club in Miami and whatever, and then it became this thing where it just stopped being all about them, and it just became this broader picture about everybody else and us and this, all this things going on. So my life has gotten better when I stopped making it all about me. Now, I know you know that, but that's not always easy, especially when your life gets awesome, which my life has been really awesome over the last few years. So I lived in L.A. for 5 years, from 2003 to 2008, and I stayed sober. They clap and stuff, and they do it wrong, but you guys clap. I guess it works. And I moved back here. I was working in the film industry, which was sort of my lifelong dream. How much time do I have, Annie? 10 minutes? Oh, Jesus. Brace yourself. I'm going to... By the way, did anybody go to the breakfast meeting on Saturday morning? Yeah, a couple people? Well, you're officially relieved of your duty because I'm speaking. The Megalomania parade will continue this Saturday as I will be the speaker at the breakfast meeting on Saturday. So, anyway, feel free to go to Run Runners or something. But anyway, I moved back up here. I got sick of the film industry and didn't really see... Well, you know what the truth is? Is that I realized that working in the film industry is impossible for me to be the kind of AA guy I wanted to be. That's the truth. I just didn't... I didn't see the time commitment and the whole weird thing. I couldn't do AA the way I wanted to. Some people can. I know them. But I just couldn't do it. So I tried something else. Plus the pace sucked. Anyway, so I moved back to the Bay Area in 2008 and came back to this meeting, and a lot of you guys were still here. But something I did notice, too, is that the turnover rate for all the meetings, I don't care which one they were about 80%. Every 5 years, there's those 80% of people just sort of like cycle through here. And that's scary, but, you know, sometimes it gets real good, I guess. I don't know. So... I was bored, and I am dangerously smugly intelligent. And if I'm left to my own devices, I'll just start wrecking shop all over the place. So I got a job at a Trader Joe's, and I was, you know, I'm not sure under or over qualified, but it was somewhere in between. And I was like, well, I guess I could get a master's degree. So for those of you who know my story, no one in my family has ever gotten a college degree ever. Ever. No one ever goes anywhere, kind of like your family, Kate. The only time anybody in my family travels is to go away to war. That's it. Otherwise, everybody stays stateside. And so I ended up getting a college degree in 2003. And then when I got up here and got bored, I ended up getting a master's degree, which is crazy because I am not that smart, and I have proof. But I got a master's degree. Debbie and Kent came to my graduation party. You remember that? And I now work at a software company. I didn't really know that you could pick a profession, study it, and then do it. I thought there was a catch there. Because you know how things work out when we plan, right? How do you make God laugh? Make a plan. And so it turns out that you still can do that. So I thought, well, I want to get into the tech world. I read a book that changed my life, and I was like, I want to get into the technology field. And got an MBA in technology, and here I am. I work at the Bishop Ranch right down the street for a tech company, and things are going great. Now, still didn't solve the romance problem. Now we all have problems with that, don't we? My mom used to work at CFR in Concord back in the 80s. Maybe some of you poor people went through there at that time. And she was so funny. She goes, man, I just love those AA guys. They're just so nice. But, boy, they can't stay married, can they? Well, don't worry, Mom. I won't even bother with that kind of mistake. So I had found a way to date effectively in AA for in a very sporadic method. Does that make sense? I had a lot of very successful short relationships in AA for about 15 years. Does anybody hear that I dated? No. Cirillo, yeah. I did date Cirillo when I came back from LA for a while. But then again, who hasn't, right? So, anyway, so I was focused on school. I was really into, like, you know, doing my things that I told you about. And it's, by the way, that's it. Like, if you're looking for the secret golden key or whatever, it's a sponsor, a home group, and do lots of service and help others. That's it. Like, there's nothing. It's, I think that because my problems are, like, bigger and more, you know, impactful and crazy, that I need a new solution to attack the new problem. Nope, same shit. Same boring, stupid AA crap. So, anyway, so speaking of stupid, boring AA crap, my sponsor asked me to go to a, and if you've heard the story, sorry, but it was the Intergroup Ad Hoc Subcommittee to Rewrite the Bylaws. Do I need to wake you up after the description? Because it was bad. It was still not good. Nothing happened, clearly. We neither rewrote or ad hoc'd anything. Still all jacked up there. But anyway, they still think selling books is the way of the future, I guess. But that's an opinion. So anyway, I go to this subcommittee meeting, and it's, as you imagined, 8 angry white guys and a short redhead girl with glasses. She was very exotic. She was from Philadelphia. Have you heard the Philadelphia accent? Oh, it's delicious. So I went to a couple meetings and ignored her for a little while, and then I was like, hey, Kent, when's that ad hoc committee meeting anyway? So I went back to the ad hoc committee meeting, and magically one day the seat next to the, you know, of course she's the recording secretary, girls, how misogynistic is that? The one girl's the recording secretary? Anyway, so she was writing the minutes of the meeting, and she'd also done some doodles up in the left-hand corner of, like, flowers and peace signs and all that crap that you guys do, and I said, who said that? And then we got married 4 years later. So my overarching message tonight is, if you really want to find true love, do more service. It's true. It worked for me. I'm sure Carol can hook you up with some deeply nerded out subcommittee ad hoc of something, right? I mean, that finance thing at General Service would have been perfect, but it's dead. So anyway, it's Monday. I hope you have a good week. Like I said, avoid the breakfast meeting on Saturday morning in Dublin. Did I say get a home group and all that? Okay. So I guess I'm going to stop. I want to thank you for having me down here. I can stop getting a disapproving look from Carol from now on. And my parting word is, if you want to do some H&I, come see me. But this is how I'll end. My H&I commitment is the lockdown Martinez psych ward for AA. And what I get to do, as many Wednesdays as I want now, because I'm a coordinator, is I get to go into the lockdown psych ward, lots of doors, and I get to look in these people in the eye and tell them, in 1994, I was locked in a place just like this, and now all of this can be yours. I had a guy who was somewhat lucid, and he said, wait a minute, you, and me and my wife do it together, we do the panel together, And this guy goes, wait a minute, you were locked in here. And I go, yeah. And he goes, and now you have a master's degree. Yeah. And you're married to that lady? He's like, wait a minute. No, wait, hold on. And he had to like go through the progression again. Wait a minute, you were in here. And they said, yeah, Alcoholics Anonymous. Here's a schedule. So thanks.